Hey, what's up, podcast? It's Dan. This is the pre-roll for episode 76. And this is such a great episode. I had real fun talking to Emma. I think we were talking about humming tunes. I might get myself a theme tune. Let me know what you think, audience, for the podcast. But on a serious note, we talked about a lot of really important things like mindfulness, like self-care. How Emma started out ECBC, which is her not-for-profit that she founded. I think there's some really important messages here. For example, like the walk and talks that Emma does, the events that she started out as well to meet other people who had been through similar experiences. I just think there's a lot to listen to here, and I think you're really love Emma's charisma, her sort of energy and positivity. It really shines through in this episode, and I really hope you enjoy it. Thank you so much for listening, and if you get chance, don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts if you're listening there, or if you're on Spotify, see if there's a way to leave a review and a rating. It really, really helps. I appreciate it. Just thank you for showing the podcast so much love. It means a lot to me. Thank you. And enjoy the episode. Good evening. Welcome to Know Yourself. This is Dan Udell, and I'm here with Emma of ECBC Manchester. Hi, Emma.
Hiya.
Thanks for coming on the show. We were just laughing before about Emma's dog. Emma's got a new dog, and we were also laughing about like humming theme tunes and stuff like that. Yeah, what were you just doing? Rocky, was it?
Rocky. Da-na-na. It always reminds me of, the Fresh Prince, where he runs up the stairs.
Yeah.
Will Smith. It always reminds me of that. So every time I'm going to go for a run, I always sing that to myself first and, like, pretend that I'm Will Smith, because it helps.
I like it. For those of you at home, I was thinking of changing the theme tune, having a theme tune. I don't have one at the moment. It's a bit depressing. So maybe I'll have one, where I'm doing, humming or, humming. I would say humming because I can't sing. Humming Shanice, I Like Your Smile. And if you don't know that song, you should probably stop listening to this and open up Spotify, go in your search, and type it in.
Go do some research.
Yes. So, Emma is the founder of this not-for-profit, I can't actually speak today, not-for-profit, ECBC Manchester, and you work with two other colleagues as well. And the charity is focused around mental health, I understand.
Yes. Yeah, it was founded by myself probably back in April, mainly to help people living with a mental illness. I think there's this massive stigma nowadays that if you have a mental illness, it's got to be fixed. And it's kind of what we need to focus on is how we can support and how we can live with it. So ECBC is all about supporting those living with a mental illness, running events, giving helpful advice, doing online helpful blogs, etc. For those who are living with a mental illness, and just helps them out, really. Like myself, I have depression and anxiety, and it just helps me keep going, knowing that there's other people out there and reading things that, already I've said in my head. It started from that I wanted to just go out and meet people. I use the Meetup app that is really good for people to meet up in and around Manchester. And I thought, I'll just start a group and just see what happens. And it just developed from there.
It grew and grew. Because, I imagine, meeting people, I know I prefer to do it for the podcast. There's a level of intimacy you get from actually meeting someone. And then, especially when you're talking about something like mental health that's so, deep and meaningful. I imagine that you start to form these really close bonds and connections with people.
Yeah, definitely. I think a lot of my friendships have been stronger since I've started talking about it openly. And a lot of my friends have turned around and said, actually, I'm struggling with that as well. and then you just can kind of start talking more and more on a deeper level. And I think it just, it's like the way into adulthood as well. You're not just talking anymore, like you're not in uni getting drunk with your pals anymore. Like, it's real life. And I think the people that I know in uni as well, like, we've developed our relationships more and more by kind of being like, whoa, what's happened? It's adulthood. And it's just, I think when you talk about mental health, it's just a deeper level into your friendship.
Yeah, it really, I know the friends that I can sit down and talk to, it's really brought us closer by me opening up first, or, you know, because like I talk quite openly about therapy, they'll like, they'll chip in without me having to say anything, because they're like, they've already got like a pre-existing understanding that like I might know what's going on for them, or I've been through stuff, so I might understand.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I don't know, I just find it really, like, yeah, it really helps, like, yeah, just, it's made every relationship in my life better.
Definitely, especially, I think, with family as well. Like, when I've started being open and trying to, stopped hiding things from my family, just being like, this is how I feel, like, it's pretty shit, but, you know, I'm trying to be open, like, my family have said to me they're really proud of me because that's shown just how strong I am, because I am trying to be open. So I think it is. I think once we start getting more and more open about it, I do think it is for the best. And I think then you feel stronger in those friendships and you feel that you can depend on those people. And again, I think sometimes it can show you maybe friends that aren't going to be there for you. And you know what? That's, you know, that's just what it is. But I think that definitely can test a friendship if you... I think one of the things that tests a friendship nowadays for me is when people, if I can't go to an event and I say, you know, I'm having one of my bad days, I know when it's my true friend, when they go, it's completely fine, that's all right, don't worry,
yeah,
just look after yourself. I know what that's like, rather than, oh, boo, like my friends be like, boo, you whore, from like Mean Girls or something like that.
Yeah.
Like, and I know they're joking and I know they don't mean it in a nasty way, but that's the last thing I want to hear. Like, I don't want to be made to feel worse. I already am telling myself I'm rubbish. If, you know, that's when I know that it's a true friendship, when they will turn around and be like, it's fine, don't worry.
Yeah, like, we understand, like,
yeah.
I might not understand what it's like for you, but I understand that you're going through a difficult time, so.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I totally agree. And even more so, if they're, like, a really good friend as well, they'll actually want to know what the experience of going through depression or anxiety or whatever is like. They'll want to know what it's like, or, you know, what to do when you are having like a rough day, like,
yeah,
how to cheer you up. Like, I know what I'm like when I'm having a rough day. I'm like, no one talk to me, I just need to be on my own, like,
yeah,
to like lick my wounds, if that makes sense.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, need some space. Yeah, I get that.
So yeah, I think there's a hell of a lot of merit in what you're saying, for sure.
Yeah, I think definitely with like friends, I think it just can, I think it's part of your recovery as well. Like, because the reason I went to go see a counsellor in the first place, because I didn't want to tell people that I knew, because I knew they'd start worrying. And I was like, you know what, I just want to talk to a stranger, because then I know they'll go home and, you know, have their tea and they'll forget about it, they won't care. But if I tell my mum this, then she won't sleep at night, because she'll be worried what I'm going to do, or, you know what I mean? Like, it's just, I think that's why I started going to see a counsellor. More and more I've stopped seeing my counsellor now, because I'm so open about it.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's, I don't feel like I have to have my sessions just to talk about it. I always talk about mental health.
Yeah. Is that like, it's that lack of judgment that a counsellor has, that, and it's that environment where you feel like you can say anything and you're going to be all right.
Yeah, definitely. Like, my counsellor, she had like a really like long sofa, and like, obviously the complete stigma and stereotypes that you lie down on the sofa and like she's there taking notes.
Yeah.
But like, it was just like a nice comfy environment, and I didn't feel like I was in like a white room, like being made to feel mental. It was just a nice casual place where I could just get those negative thoughts out, and then she could just tell me, like, you know, advise me what I could do to help, or ask me the questions that I probably didn't want to ask myself. So yeah, I think definitely that helped. But I think now I don't have to go in that room, and I don't have to go in that space.
Yeah.
To kind of get to that mental place.
What sort of counsellor did you have out of interest?
Private. If you want a 20-minute rant about the NHS, I would skip over. I won't rant about it, but yes, I went with private because I didn't want to wait 3 months. And even though not everyone's in that position, I'm lucky enough that my parents paid for sessions if I couldn't afford it myself. I mean, like, it's expensive, and it was ridiculously expensive, but I know friends who have had to wait 20 something weeks to see a counsellor, and I just don't understand. Like, you know, that's very strong of them to be able to wait that long, but I just couldn't. I could not. And then all I know is that person, that counsellor has had 10 sessions already that day. If I saw them, they're stressed, they need probably a session themselves. And they just probably don't want to listen to me. And I think that it was nice that I could go to my private counsellor, because she wasn't stressed and she wasn't pulling her hair out, and she could just sit there and listen.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously I paid her to, so she had to. But I know a lot of people that tried through the NHS, and it just doesn't happen.
Mm. Yeah, I actually went private as well. What sort? Oh, go on, sorry.
No, I was saying I don't blame you.
Yeah.
Same as me. It's a horrendous wait, so it's just best to sometimes go private if you can afford it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I probably went when I couldn't, but for me, I felt like I had no other option.
Yeah, of course.
I didn't even get offered to be put on a waiting list when I went to my doctor, so I literally felt like I had no option other than to pay for it.
Yeah.
So I totally understand. Actually, I've got another question. What approach did the counsellor take with you? You know, like the different models of like counselling. Like, for example, mine was like psychodynamic.
I'm not 100% sure. I know it wasn't like, she didn't do like CBT or anything like that. It was mainly just, she would just listen to me and then ask me questions of what I could do. What do I think I could do to help? What maybe could I do? What did I think was happening? Like, so more like, instead of her sat there telling me what was wrong or telling me a diagnosis, it was more like, I think she's like a well-being coach, counsellor. So rather than like a therapist, I think she kind of was like listening and then maybe kind of tried to give me advice rather than anything else. And I think that's what I needed. I think she was the same age as my mum, so I think I needed just like someone just sit there and listen. I think just kind of like, let me answer those questions that I didn't really want to answer, maybe like out and about, but in that safe space, I could sit there and kind of reflect.
Yeah.
I can't think of a term for it, but yeah, it was just mainly kind of like a well-being counselling.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Now I've heard of counselling approaches like that. They kind of adopt like a person-centred approach and then take on like other like wellness and stuff like that and like mindfulness on board with it as well. So no, that's interesting. It's just always interesting to get other people's like experiences with therapy and, you know, what worked, what didn't work. Like I did a podcast episode recently, and I was speaking to a lady who specializes in like alternative like therapies, like like Reiki and like all these different types of like therapy, because I think just like you've been, it's like good to keep an open mind about it and try whatever suits you and fits you.
Yeah, definitely.
I think, sorry,
go ahead.
No, you carry on.
No, I was just gonna say, I think it's definitely I agree, because I think you have to have an open mind. And I think especially if you are seeking help, you do need to have that open mind, because if you already go in with that closed mind, then it's hard against that counsellor to try and help.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, because you're kind of like, it's like friction. You're like fighting against the tide as it were, and like
yeah.
that they feel like their job is like 100 times more difficult, I guess. And like, it's a commitment, isn't it? It's like getting a personal trainer for a gym, or you know, it's like taking it on a course, or you know, it's a commitment. You've got an obligation, especially with therapy, to yourself to see it through, because
yeah.
I see it personally as like an investment in yourself, and it doesn't pay off like immediately, which is I think what 99% of people think. And it's especially what I thought when I started therapy. It actually pays off later. It's like dividends. It like pays off like months and years afterwards.
Oh, definitely. Oh yeah, that's the thing. I think a lot of people when they first go to therapy, they definitely think, right, well, I'll just have a few sessions and then after that I'll be all right. And I'll be, you know, like this idea of being fixed. And I think, yeah, it definitely is a longer thing. And I think it took me a year and a half to start being like, oh yeah, I should probably start, you know, putting what I have learned in my sessions towards my actual life. So I think it is a long time. I think it is not something that happens in weeks, and I think that's why I get annoyed with the NHS, because they book you in for like 4 sessions as if that's enough.
Yeah.
And I just think they don't understand that it is something that is gonna need to keep going for a long time, and then as you said, then you can start kind of realizing and start like using it more and more as the years and months go on.
Yeah, because like I've been going to therapy for like 5 years, and I still go now, and I just think back to like the different points. Like I would say like a year into it, there were certain things that I overcame. Then like 3 years into it, there were even more things. But like at 5 years, like I feel like it's only like there's only more stuff that I'm finding, and in a good way, and like progressing on, and like my life is like coming on in leaps and bounds. And it's really difficult when you're at the start of the tunnel to see that light and to be willing to be patient with it and stick with it, especially when you put in a financial like investment into it, as well as a emotional and mental investment. And it's difficult as well when it's like going to gym, the results don't pay off straight away.
Yeah,
it can be quite frustrating, and you don't understand why, and it can be difficult. And you know, I remember not wanting to carry on like quite early into my journey, but
yeah,
you like stick with it, and you're so glad that you do.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
So with regards to like ECBC, you know, you started wanting to like meet up with people, and you said that you use like the Meetup app. So why was it that you wanted to meet with people as opposed to, you know, some people prefer doing it online, for example, like, you know, like setting up chat groups and stuff like that. What was the need for you for like meeting up with these different people in person, I guess?
I love talking to people. And even though I have social anxiety, I still have, there's like two sides of me battling it out. The other one side of me is like, ugh, people. And the other side of me is like, yay, like talking to people. And I think that side of me is stronger. And I just thought, you know what, I fancy talking to some people that maybe are just like me. And I just thought, you know what, let's just organise some events, see who turns up. I didn't think anyone would really turn up, so I just bribed my friends. And then people did turn up, and they said to me, oh, I was a bit anxious about coming to this, but you know, like, I'm glad I did. And that then was just me being like, right, this is what I'm doing. I think I do like talking to people online. I'm always on Twitter, it's become an obsession. And I think there is that element, and I love talking to people online, but I'm like, you know, I like face to face. I like sitting there having a cup of coffee and just being like, so mental health, and just having that nice chat openly face to face. I've always been quite an open person, And I did, like, back in my uni days, I did, like, events for, like, my drama society and stuff like that. So I've had that in me where I like organising events. And just getting people talking to each other. Like, I can't tell you the actual joy I have when I can just stand back at one of our events and, like, see everyone talking to each other and knowing I don't have to kind of go in between and keep people talking. Like, they just kind of sit there, talk, and I can just sit back and be like, this is what I wanted. So I think that actual physical, just being there, talking to people, seeing people talking to each other, I really enjoy that part.
That's amazing. I love that. I just love the, like, fearlessness about it. Like, how, you know, you set up this event, like, you know, most people might not even get that far, where they'd be like, oh, like, you know, no one's going to turn up. Like, I know if I did something like that, I'd be really, like, worried, like, what if I'm the only person there, like, that sort of thing. Like, just out of interest, like, how many people did you get turned up to the first one?
About 22.
That's amazing.
I know. I was in shock. I will say a few of them were my friends.
Yeah.
But then even they turned around and went, Emma, do you know everyone here? And I'm like, no. And they're like, oh my God. And I was like, no, this is not everyone I've bribed. It's like, this is actual people that have seen the event and wanted to come. And, you know, like, that's when I suddenly was like, do you know what, I've got to keep doing this.
Yeah.
And I think it was just, that was my test to myself. And yeah, it didn't feel like brave at the time, but I do, looking back, think, oh my God, how did I do that? But I think I was just, I had to prove that to myself. And I said to my friends and my family, I said, if no one turns up, then that's fine. I tried. And you know what, I'll do something else. But I think that was the thing that I was testing myself. Whether I could be like, do you know what, actually I will do this, because people have turned up, people have asked for this, then do you know what, I'll keep going.
Oh, wow. So when was the next one after the first one? Did you decide?
So I do it. So it's like monthly. So I try to do at least two events a month. The first one was more like kind of like an introducing this group kind of thing, like being like, what is ECBC? This is what I want to do. Like, come and join the group, and then let me know what events you kind of want to do. So it's kind of a get to know you kind of thing. And then every month on the second Saturday of the month, I do a walk and talk at a local park near me, which seems to vary depending on the weather. Obviously it's Manchester, so it's always raining. But people do come along. In July, it was a really nice day, so a lot of people came on that day. Then September, it was absolutely pissing it down, and it was only me and my friend. So it just depends. But again, I get in this mindset where it's like, well, I'm just going to turn up. Either way, I'm going to have a walk and a brew. And so we do like a little bit of a walk. There's like a pub along the way, so we go in, have a brew. It's a dog-friendly pub, so everyone brings their dogs if they want to. And then we just walk back. It's only like 2 hours and a bit. It starts your Saturday morning, and I think it just seems to work for people. I think people like to kind of get up, you know, get some out of the house, get some chatting to people. You know, they don't have to. If they want to just walk, they don't have to talk to anyone. I've known people come along who just kind of a little bit anxious, so they just walk, and I'm like, that's fine. No one has to, like, I think it's a bit easier because you're not sat at table staring at one another.
Yeah.
I think it's nice that you can go for that walk. You can kind of walk side by side. No one's staring at you. If you want to, you can walk in front and listen to other people's conversations. Usually there's always me chatting shit in the background, so there's always someone to listen to. So I think that's what I try and run every single month, and so far I have. And it's just very varied. But I like to just keep that going because I like the fact that it's encouraging people to get out of the house, go for a walk, and I like it anyway. So even if I turn up and one person turns up, I'm not bothered. I'll have a chat with them and I'll go and have a cup of tea. It's never for me been about the numbers, which I try and make sure I always remember, because otherwise you just get sad. If you put too much pressure on yourself to get numbers or people turning up, like, it's like a birthday party. If you don't get people turning up, then I'd just be sad. But I've got to see it in a different way. Yeah. Otherwise I would be upset, but I just don't care. And then I try and do like a monthly kind of a bit of a random event. So one was like, go for a brew and a natter. at one of our like a cafe near me. Recently we went to the Science and Industry Museum in Manchester, and that was quite popular actually. So we're doing the People's History Museum next. Yeah. Because I didn't even think, you know, you don't really think of an idea and you're just kind of like, well, I'll just try this, see what people say. And I just kind of put it on and then I looked back again and there was 20 people wanting to come. And I was like, oh my God, okay. Clearly people like to go to museums.
Yeah.
So I think it's nice, again, because there's not that pressure to talk. But you can look around, look at the museum, have a chat along the way, get to know people, but there's not that horrendous pressure of being in one room to talk to people, like a networking event. I just know people who have anxiety would just hate that. So yeah, we tend to do like varied events like that. Like I'm trying to sort out kayaking at the moment.
Wow.
Meditation, just loads of things are in the works. It's just getting all the dates together, and obviously unfortunately I can't do them for free. So it's just kind of like trying to get numbers and then payment and stuff. It just takes a bit of a long time. So that's in the works, hopefully in 2019. And I want to do like an anxiety friendly dancing, like fitness class, because I used to try and go to the gym and I'd turn up and everyone's there in the lycra. Everyone knows the steps. You're the only one that's going the wrong way when everyone's going the other way. And it's just horrible.
That's a really good idea.
Let's just do something where there's no mirrors at all. Why would I want to look at myself doing that? Horrendous. So yeah, it's kind of like I want to do something like that where it's just, you know, a bit of a dancing, bit of like exercise, but there's no pressure to be excellent at it. Especially when I'm there like in a really silly outfit at the front, like hopefully that'll make people feel less like, do you know what, she's being an idiot, so I could be. So yes, that was a long-winded answer, but a lot of events are happening, but mainly I do the walk and talk to kind of encourage people to get out of the house.
Yeah. I love that. I love the walk and talk idea, especially going to the museums as well, because it does completely take the pressure off talking, because you can like make small talk. Like if you're out and about like walking, you can be like, oh, look at the weather, or, you know, look at the trees, or isn't this park nice? Or if you're at a museum, you can be like talking about an exhibit, and that can be like a segue into a serious conversation. Yeah, or, you know,
exactly.
I just think it's a great idea.
Yeah, it has gone well so far. So yeah, I'm going to keep going with that and just keep, I don't know, I'm going to eventually run out of museums in Manchester. So I'll try and find something else that's similar.
Could do like a coach trip to Blackpool or something.
Oh yes, that's true actually. Oh yes. Oh, maybe to Liverpool. Oh,
yeah.
All the ideas, they're forming.
So tell everyone, you know, how did ECBC Manchester get started in the first place, you know, the whole idea of it?
So I struggle with anxiety and depression, and I'd come home from London, I moved back to Manchester, I was unemployed, like just felt lower than low, and living in my mother's loft, and I was like, this is not good. So I think from there, it's been this really long journey of self-discovery and going through counselling myself. And then from that, I was like, do you know what? I've learned quite a lot. I've learned a lot about depression. I've learned a lot about myself. But I think someone, you know, I could help someone just even by letting them know that it's okay. So I just started thinking about what could I do? So I started like, you know, looking on Twitter, if anything, like started volunteering, just anything I could do. And then I came across the Meetup app and I thought, you know what, I could do a group, something like that. But I didn't want to call it like anxiety something or something like that. I just wanted to make it feel that anyone was welcome. Like they didn't have to have anxiety if they wanted to come along, or, you know, they could just feel isolated. They could be new to the city, and just not know anyone. So I wanted just anyone to be made to feel welcome. So at 2 o'clock in the morning on, I can't remember the date, but it was in March at some point last year, with a lot of wine, I was just like, let's just take on the world and make this meetup, like group. I went on Facebook, I made a Facebook group. I invited all of the people I knew in Manchester, all of them. So many, many people I haven't spoken to in about 10 years. just got a random notification that I'd invited them to a group. And I just was like, and I woke up, I kind of like stopped it there, went to bed, woke up in the morning and was like, what have I done? Started getting that familiar self, like, dread and self-doubt and being like, oh no, this is not good. And then I got a message from someone who I hadn't spoken to in years saying like, oh, this looks really good, like, thank you, can you let me know when like the next event's going to be or something like that, just like a nice message, but made me go, actually, do you know what, maybe that wasn't a terrible thing that happened whilst I was trashed, maybe it was supposed to happen. So yeah, it's kind of like stemmed from there. It's just like from there my friend Jodie got involved, and she had also been struggling with her mental health, and we like started talking about it more and more, and our friendship started to kind of like develop more and more. And yeah, she does PR in the day, so she's magnificent and can somehow make everything look like we know what we're doing. And she runs like the blog, she does the website. She's just fantastic, and I think that from there, then we got Jen involved, and now it's just kind of expanding into this big thing that I probably need to start organising a bit more. But yeah, it's been a long journey, but so far I'm loving it.
Yeah, it just sounds like it's grown like really like organically as well. Like there's not been any like outside pressure. It's all just been, you know, just natural through people wanting to do more of what's already works, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. And I think the main thing I wanted to do was just make it like a community thing, like someone like that, anyone could do it, like anyone could turn around and be like, do you know what, like I'll just run an event and people with a mental illness can come, or people that maybe are feeling a bit low, because I think these national charities are absolutely fantastic. But when I struggled with my depression, the last thing I wanted to do was call someone I didn't even know their name of. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not bad-mouthing it at all because they do excellent work.
Yeah.
But for me, I would rather go to somewhere that I can just speak to someone face-to-face, have a chat, be made to feel like I'm part of something, rather than calling something that I kind of don't know that person, if you get what I mean.
Yeah. And plus, you might be around people that are from the same community, so you might actually know someone there by, you know, just serendipity of it being in the same area.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, definitely.
Interesting. Yeah, and I think it's a really good idea. Like, you know, one day you could have like a like your own building, and you know, if you continue to do well, which I've no doubt that you will, you know, you could have like your own community building where like people could come in and say, you know, yeah, sign me up for the next meetup sort of thing.
Literally, yeah. You've just spoken exactly what I'm planning to do. So that is the 10-year plan. So, yes, you've looked into my mind. You've read it. That's exactly what I want to do.
That's amazing.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, like, all the more power to you. Like, I really... I don't see any reason why it wouldn't work. Like, I think the whole idea of, like, meeting people up in the first place was just brilliant, you know. And especially, like, the walking and talking, like, you know, what a way to get people to, you know, start talking. And because, naturally, when you're with other people, it's just going to happen. Like, you know, it's like if you put people in a room, it's probably going to happen. But on a walk, I feel like it's just inevitable. Like, people are going to just start opening up about stuff. Especially if you've got, like, a front runner like yourself, or, you know, a couple of people that are like you, that are chatty, that kind of get the conversation going in the first place. Yeah, just think it's a great idea.
Yeah, oh, thank you. That's very kind.
No worries. It's true. Like, I don't even... You know, I've not even seen you in person, or the charity, you know, the like not for profit in person, but like I don't know, I just get a good sense for it already, and I can tell, like, yeah, I can see it doing very well.
Oh, thank you. Well, fingers crossed.
Yeah.
All your fingers crossed.
Yeah. So, like, you know, what do you usually say to people if they're like struggling with like self-esteem or like self-worth? Is there any, like, you know, from your experience and I guess from other people's experience, like, have you got any sort of like tips and advice that you'd share with like people about, you know, helping you look after yourself better, and, you know, also like taking time out for you, like valuing your own time, I guess?
Yeah, I've got, the list is endless, but the main thing I try and, like, if someone said to me, like, you know, this is happening, or if the main thing I think with depression and anxiety is that inner voice who is, like, again, it could be with any mental illness, but with what I've been through, I can't comment on the other mental illnesses, but what I've been through, there is that inner voice that's telling you, you know, you're not good enough. This has gone wrong, you're not good enough, you know, you shouldn't get up in the morning because, you know, the day's already going to be shit, so what's the point? You just might as well close your eyes and just, you know, just vanish, hopefully vanish from the earth. And I think it's trying to channel, if you were, like, finding that way of realising that you should not say that to yourself. Would you say that to a friend? You know, would you say that if you were looking? I think there's an excellent TV series called My Mad Fat Diary. And she is asked by her therapist to, like, talk to her 10-year-old self, and, like, they show on the TV show, you know, like, as if she's actually looking at her 10-year-old self, and he's like, would you tell her that she's fat and horrible? And she was like, no, I wouldn't do that, that's horrible. And he was like, then why are you doing that to yourself? And I think it's just, that's the main thing I would encourage people to do, is just try and, I don't know, visualise. Like, would you say that to a friend? Would you say that to a family member? Would you tell them they're not good enough? Would you tell them that, you know, they're going to get fired, or that they did something rubbish at work, so, like, they're rubbish? I just think trying to find that, try and fight that inner voice. I think it's always going to be there. There's always going to be that self-doubt. We're human, so there's always going to be that. But finding a way to kind of redirect it and just being like, whatever, like, I don't think that's going to help me right now, and just shoving it to the side. I think that's the main thing that I've learned through my therapy, is, you know, not beating yourself with invisible sticks.
100%, like, not beating yourself down when you're already in, like, a rough place as it is.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. It's so sad, like, if I could look back and look at what I've said to myself in my, like, darkest times, it's horrible, it's very sad. It's like, why would anyone say that to themselves? But it goes on every single day. Like, every single day there's someone, you know, that's why it leads to suicide, because they start listening to that voice more and more, and they just don't think they're good enough for the world, and it's just very sad. So I think that's one thing that I would focus on, is just trying to redirect those negative thoughts, you know, letting them, they do happen, but letting them, either writing them down and then just, you know, ripping them up, or just trying to focus on the positive as well as the negative.
Yeah, I really like that. How would you describe, you know, so you've got depression, or you've had and struggled with depression in your life.
Yeah.
I didn't want to just assume that you're still suffering with it. And you've also, you mentioned about social anxiety as well.
Yeah.
How did those, like, manifest in your life? Because, you know, I actually had a really interesting podcast episode recently, and someone commented on it actually and said that they liked it because we compared what our versions of depression were and what they were like. And they said, it was amazing to me that there was actually differences, and, you know, you had similarities, but there are also differences as well. So, like, I think it'd be really interesting to get your point of view on what it felt like for you and how you experienced it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Well, I still have to take antidepressants, so I'm still depressed, but I'm on medication that seems to have evened things out. The plan is to eventually come off them in the next year or so, and so that I can kind of get back to feeling a bit more, like, natural and not having to always have the tablets. But it happened a couple of years ago, so I've always struggled with self-esteem. There's always been that self-doubt and social anxiety. But a couple of years ago, I ended up getting pregnant and having to have a termination, and that completely triggered my depression. I know sometimes there can be a trigger, sometimes there isn't.
Right.
But for me, that was a definite trigger. And it just literally changed me into a completely different person. It just made me see the world in a different way. It was like, you know, what people always say, like, you know, the world loses its colour. But yeah. It did. I just completely saw everything black and white. I was just in this whole different world. I was living with people I don't really know in London. I didn't know her. I didn't have any friends that lived near me. It was just very, very low. And I think, you know, that kind of loneliness made me hate myself a lot more, but it also made me hate everyone around me. You know, it broke my relationship. It kind of like, it just like grew and grew and grew. But at the time, no one, like not even myself, knew that it was depression. I just thought I was just having a bit of a bad time.
Yeah.
You know, I was a bit homesick, maybe. I completely moved on from what happened, like as if it never happened. And I think that's what probably didn't help as well, because I didn't address it.
Yeah.
So I think from there, it just completely was just all about self-hate. And this self-hate for myself grew and grew and grew. And even when I moved back home, I tried to get a new job. I kind of like tried to move on. I wouldn't address it, so it just got worse. And then from there, it was when I just started counselling that I started to realise actually how bad it had got. And it was just, it was mainly, yeah, I'd say the self-hate. I mean, that would tell me why I shouldn't get up in the morning. I just did not want to get up. I would be, I'd literally get up, get changed to some form of outfit and go to work. And like, not even, you know, like, I think an inspiration of mine, Jane Hardy, she had... she's like literally got fake teeth because she, when she was depressed, she didn't brush her teeth for months and months and months, and they just dropped out because she just didn't think she valued herself high enough to brush her teeth, which I know kind of like when you hear it, it's like, what? But she didn't. And I think that's kind of where I know I got. I slowly started to value myself lower and lower, self-hatred, and I just did not think I deserved to be happy. And I think with depression, it was literally just like this cloud. I know a lot of people have different like cartoons and like people have like different ways that they describe it, but for me it was literally just this cloud over me that was just, I just couldn't shift. And that's why I definitely had to go on the antidepressants, because it just helped me start like gaining control over that depression. It helped me kind of start being like, right, let's think about why I am depressed. And it's helped me kind of step out of that cloud, rather. And it helped me kind of gain, I don't know what the word is, a way of just kind of like reflecting and being like, right, why am I depressed? And I think that helped. I think at that point, I just couldn't even begin to like try and think.
Yeah.
What was, you know, like, was it depression? I don't know. Like, I just, in my head, I was just very low and just very, very, very low. And I think, yeah, for a lot of people it can be kind of similar symptoms. I have spoken to a lot of people about it and they have like similar, like they can't get out of bed and stuff like that, but there can be other things as well that kind of bring them down. But I definitely think that self-hatred and those negative thoughts played a massive part.
It's interesting, there's a lot of reflections there for me, and there's a lot of new things as well. Which is why it was so interesting to hear what it was like for you to experience it. That self-hatred is like all too familiar and friendly. And for me, like, I didn't share anything, and I actually suppressed a lot, which was similar to yourself. I let things fester. But it was like a lifetime of that. So things have been left unsaid for a long time. And I think for me, it just it all just came bubbling up to the surface. And then it was like, oh, I've got to deal with it now. In some ways. That's why I'm always glad that I was assaulted. And like as a result, I had PTSD. Because of that, I couldn't function anymore, and I eventually went to get help because you know, like, I couldn't live life anymore. It's like, it was great in a way because it forced me to, you know, seek out help and start talking about these things. And it's kind of like when you're in debt, like, if you leave it, it just gets worse and worse and worse. Like, interest builds up, and, like, it just snowballs. But then, like, when you start chipping away at it, you know, eventually it's, like, massive and it looks, like, really intimidating at first. And, oh, my God, it's going to take 5 years. And then slowly you chip away at it. And that becomes, like, a snowball as well, very much like how you got in that situation in the first place.
Yeah,
it's interesting. How did you, out of interest, like, how do you experience, like, social anxiety? What's that like for you?
It's basically linked to my self-esteem. So, as I said, I've got low self-esteem. So, face-to-face and, like, stuff like this, I will be very open. I'll chat. You know, I've always been quite an extrovert. Like, I will chat. I'm outgoing. If, like, I'm not, like, I used to be, like, if I wasn't at the party, you know, like, I'd be like, where's Collie Cop? Like, where's Emma? Like, she's not here yet. I've always been someone that, like, people remember because I'm just always myself. But when I sit and reflect and, like, when I sit, I will overthink everything. So I'll probably tonight overthink every single thing I've said in this podcast, and I'll think, like, or, you know, was that the right thing to say? Or that, will that be offensive? Or, you know, do you think I'll come across as this? Or, you know, like, afterwards, it's always, on the actual time socialising, I'm fine. But afterwards, and I think more and more that's gotten worse and worse. So that when it comes to, like, before the events, I think, oh, well, you know, it's just going to be awful because I'll be fine. But then I just won't sleep because I'll be thinking about what happened at the event. Or what happened, like, you know, in that day, if there was, like, especially for work, if I make a mistake at work, I will not let me forget it for, like, months and months and months, and it will just fester. And I think for me, that just, I think my social anxiety just links to my self-esteem.
Yeah,
I think it's more maybe not a diagnosis of anxiety, it's, I think it's just, it links up with my self-esteem and how I appear confident. And I think for a lot of people, they've always, like, once they read my blog, or if they say, like, they go, oh, man, I always thought you were quite a confident, bubbly person. It's like, I am. But behind that, there's also quite a sensitive person. And I do think that links to my social anxiety and makes me just dread, you know, going to these events. And I think at first I wouldn't mind so much, but I think over the years, as my depression has kind of, like, interlinked, it's kind of got worse and worse, because then my depression and my negative thoughts will then link up with those negative thoughts, and it'll be like, well, you just shouldn't go to this event because you're just going to be, you know, rubbish, and, like, people will talk about you afterwards, and so you might as well just lie here. And then if I don't go to the event and people say, oh, you know, why are you not coming, then I'll just make myself feel worse as well. So it's all kind of interlinked, like a nice fun game. But I think the main thing is, like, I don't think it's, like, just social anxiety. I think it is, yeah, just linked to that self-esteem.
Yeah, I totally understand what you mean. Like, I have anxiety, but, like, it's like the it feels like the smaller piece of the puzzle for me. The more I do and, like, find out about myself, the more I realize that the, like, PTSD and anxiety were, like, there, and, you know, they're bad and, you know, that sort of thing. But, like, there was actually, like, a deeper issue, like, you know, throughout, like, childhood and stuff like that, that, like, has been interesting to, like, navigate through. It felt like that was, like, a lot, it was the heart of a lot of these different issues. So I totally understand what you mean, where it's, like, yeah, it's a part of it, but it's also, like, cyclical, because, like, it, like, feeds into the other things that are going on, and it does become, like, a vicious cycle. Like, I had a bad weekend, was it last weekend? I think it was literally last weekend, the weekend's gone. Don't know why, I had no reason. I just woke up on a Saturday, and I usually get up quite early to go to the gym, go to badminton, and then I'll go for a walk around the woods. So you can see why I like your walking and talking stuff so much.
I was going to say, it's a very active lifestyle, this.
I never used to be, trust me. And I woke up and I woke up and I was just staring at the ceiling and I was like, I just don't want to go. I just feel like worthless. I feel a complete sense of like apathy. And I just don't think it's worthwhile me going. I don't know, it was just this like impending sense of doom as well. Just washed over me like for that day, and I had no control over it whatsoever. It just arrived and I was like, oh, alright. In the end, like, you know, very much like yourself, because I talk about stuff now, or I'm starting to anyway, I'm not very good at opening up about things that are going on for me right now. Like, I'm very good at talking about the past, but I struggle to talk about like the here and now, because it's like fresh, and I don't like being vulnerable. Like, you know, I actually later on in the day, I ended up going for my walk. I didn't go to the gym and I didn't do badminton, which I did feel a little bit bad about, but you know, I went for my walk and I didn't want to before, so I felt like that was an achievement.
Yeah, fantastic.
So I totally get what you mean.
I think it's as well, I think setting those realistic goals, I think definitely is like good for like living with a mental illness. Like you said, like, you know, a fantastic goal and achievement was that you didn't want to go out, but you did. You know, you might have not done the morning activities, but you went out for that walk. And I think definitely it's great having those goals. I think I've been talking to a young lady she's just gone to university, but over summer I was talking to her and she really struggled leaving the house. And then like one day she said to me that she was able to go in the garden, and I was like, that's fantastic. You know, it's just those small goals then make, you know, that makes her feel so much better. And like, you know, if someone turned around and was like, well, so what, you go to the garden, like, you know, then that would take her back to square one. But
yeah,
the fact that you have got those small goals and those achievable goals, then like, you can set yourself that, and then you'll make yourself feel better rather than setting yourself, you know, like, I'm going to run a marathon next week. Well, no. Like, you know, set yourself those achievable goals. I think that's definitely something that's helped with my recovery, definitely.
Yeah, yeah. I really like that you said that, thank you. It was like a really good addition on top. Like, yeah, that's a really good point you've just made. Like, I've had to learn recently, like, I would get an email at work and I'd be like replying to a client or a customer, and I'd say, you know, oh yeah, you'll have this by 10. And I realised just because I can have something done by 10 doesn't mean I should, if that makes sense.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Like, it was a really big shift for me. So now, like, I actually had an example of this today. I had a client email me for something, and I said, okay. And I knew I could get it done by 10, but it'd be a squeeze.
Yeah.
And instead I said, I can get that done for you by 10:30.
Yeah.
Because that gave me, like, an hour, because it was 9:30, and you know, it meant that I could go to the loo if I suddenly needed to go to the loo and stuff like that. And it's little things that I'm learning, like, just because you can do something in a certain time frame, like, doesn't mean that you should, because, like, where's the wiggle room? Like, where's, like, being practical and realistic and that sort of thing?
Yeah, definitely. Like, I wrote a blog about, like, the power of saying no, because, like, so much you see nowadays is all about saying yes. And you know, like, you watch like the Jim Carrey, I think it is, like, movie that's all about Yes Man.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, that lasted like less than a year though. Like, do you think he really did that for the rest of his life? So it's kind of like setting that realistic, you know what, sometimes you can say no, it doesn't make you a bad person. Like, you know what, like, if you keep saying yes, then you'll tire yourself out and then you won't be able to actually help people. So if you just set yourself those realistic goals and say no to some things, like, you know, if your friend turns around, like one of the examples I put in the blog, it's like your friend turns around and was like, yeah, can you take me to the airport? Like, part of me would be like, well, yeah, you should, because, you know, he's only around the corner. But then part of me remembers, like, the actual effort getting to the airport is at the moment. I just feel like, no, get the tram. Like, I think it doesn't make me a bad person. It doesn't make me a bad friend.
Yeah.
You know, realistic. It's like, do you know what? Because then if I did all that and then I'd come home, I'd feel worse and I'd feel horrendous. And I think it's just setting that, making sure that you are putting yourself first sometimes. And that, I think, is definitely very important. I think especially we did like a big campaign in September called Self-Care September, and which was going all around, very much online, all about how we do need to, you know, even the smallest things can be self-care. Like, yes, even just sitting down for having 5 minutes, just reading a book, or, you know, just getting a bit of space to yourself. It's just anything. Cleaning. I know it doesn't sound like it, but having a bit of a clean can just really clear your mind. And that is a bit of self-care. So every single day we did like one small thing you could do to be like, you know, to do a bit of self-care. And it went down really well, because I think people forget, especially like people I think that have got these hectic lives, like mums and dads that have to put other people first. Like, whilst I've been looking after my puppy, I have taken a step back looking after myself. So today I came home, you know, I gave them a bit of a fuss, and then I went and got a gin and tonic, because I was like, do you know what, sod it. It's past 5 o'clock, and, you know, I've had a hectic week, and sometimes you do have to just sit there and just be like, you know what, I'm going to do a little bit of something for me. So I think definitely self-care and just saying no sometimes is a part of self-care as well.
Yeah, I love that, the ability to say no. I like that a lot. There's a book that I read by a guy called Mark Manson, called The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck.
Oh, yes, I started reading that.
Yeah. Oh, that is just so brilliant. It really is.
I love it. Yeah, I'm on like chapter 3, but I got distracted as usual. but I need to, yeah, go back to it and keep reading it, because it did make me laugh.
I started reading it, bought the audiobook, lost my physical book.
Oh, no.
And then bought the physical book again. I would really... The audiobook is amazing, obviously, because you can listen to it in the car and whatever, like, yeah, en route somewhere. So, yeah, I loved it. I'm so glad that you've, like, started reading it as well.
Yeah, it is good. It really is. And I think there's another one called, I can't remember who writes it, but I've got it on my list as well, called, like, Fuck Anxiety or something like that. And that made me laugh as well. But I like that. There's a big stigma about like self-help books and how they're like, you know, this fluffy stuff. But it's like really good. Like Matt Haig is another one that I read all the time. But, you know, they're helpful because, again, it's another, like listening to this podcast, if someone was struggling right now and listening to this, it helps them a little bit because they know they're not the only one. And I think that's nice to read a book like that, because you're like, whoa, there's someone else out there who's, you know, managed to sit down and read write a book. So if they can write a book, then maybe I can get through this day and like get on with, you know, my day, even if it's a bit stressful. So I think there's another podcast as well that I can't remember the name of that I listen to sometimes. So I think that helps as well. And, you know, like even, I can't even think of it now, but like, I just think definitely the representations that are in the media at the moment are getting slightly better.
Yes.
Because you are kind of getting to know that, you know, it's a real thing. It's not something to be made fun of. It's not something to mock. You know, we're not snowflakes. There's actually something that we need to discuss.
Yeah, like, totally. I feel like I felt like there was a general sort of sense of like miseducation about it, and not from like a like academic sense, but like, yeah, that's the reason I started this podcast, is because like, I remember when I went to the doctors, and I remember like all the time before that, literally between the age of 16 and 20, when I was like at the height of like PTSD and anxiety, like I didn't have a clue what was going on, and I'd never heard these terms either, and I didn't even know I like had it until I went to see a therapist. Like, you know, I didn't even know that people struggling with mental health was a thing, like,
yeah,
unless you were like sectioned or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you do hear a lot about that, you know, like the old mental asylums and stuff like that. You're just like, oh well, if I, that's the only thing about mental health, because that's just when people get locked up. Yeah,
and like, because I'm a man, like, there's a certain sense of pride about, like, I mean, for me, I had a completely mistaken identity. Like, I'm actually quite an emotional person, and like, in touch with my emotions, which I'm actually incredibly proud of now, but I used to be ashamed of it and hide it away. And, you know, that sense of pride stopped me talking about like things that were going on for me with like mental health and stuff like that. And, you know, I don't know whether it was society, I don't know whether it was, you know, I don't know what it was, but I had to deconstruct that and remove it from me by building up a new version of me, if that makes sense.
Yeah, totally. That makes a lot of sense.
And I think there's going to be a lot more people that are going to go through that process, which is a good thing in my eyes.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I think a lot of people, yeah, I think there's a lot of self-discovery and stuff like that. But I think there is, you know, it's a massive journey. Again, as we said, like, it doesn't, it's not something that happens overnight. It's something that happens over years and years. And you start to kind of understand who you really are. And, you know, that you don't have to put on, like, a charade. You can be who you want. And, like, you know, you might see some things as negative, but actually it's quite a good quality. Like you said about your sensitivity, like, you know, that's actually, it gets you to where you are now. And some people, you know, like, as you said, like, it's not a negative, but some people, if they are sensitive, as you said, like, some people see it as a negative. And it's just, I think it's a lot of a journey for people to kind of realize that they aren't as negative as they think they are. If that makes sense. I don't really make a lot of sense.
Well, I think so.
Yeah.
Mm.
Waffling on now, it's the gin.
Hey, I think, I don't like gin myself. I like beer and sort of cider. That's more of my thing. I'm actually like jamming a bit more with wine these days as well. But I don't know what it is
wine,
with gin.
Wine has gives a horrible hangover though.
Yeah.
Wine headache. Lethal.
Red wine hangovers. I don't really know about rosé and white wine, but Jesus.
Oh, it's horrendous. No, I can't do it anymore. No, that's why gin, I don't get that bad of a hangover.
Mm.
I used to hate it. It tastes like petrol, but I just slowly have allowed it. I've just kind of like, you know what, fine. I'll accept you now. Mainly because it comes in bowls. So I like that. I like that quantity of alcohol, so I think I have accepted that. But yeah, wine I don't really touch very much in nowadays, unless it's mulled wine, which is coming to that time of year.
Yes.
So I'm ready for that. So yeah, I think, I think definitely gin. Beer, I've never been able to touch, never.
Really?
And cider just makes me look like I've got a big old pregnant belly, really. Like, I don't put in cider, but it just makes me bloated so badly. So, and then like people don't serve you because you think you're pregnant. It's like, no. So yeah, stick with my gin, I think.
Yeah, gin. What sort of gin do you go for?
Whatever's cheapest, I shouldn't say. But like, I live across the road to Aldi, so very handy. And they do actually, they've done some like festival of gins. So, but I like that London Dry gin. But mainly, not something, you know, when they put like loads of stuff in it, they try and mess around with it. Not about that. Mainly like London Dry gin. Perhaps a bit of Gordon's.
Yeah.
If we're pushing the bowl out, if we're spending a bit more. But no, normally just the £10 one from Aldi is what I'm happy with.
Respect. Yeah, don't they do like something crazy like one of the world's, they do like the world's best everything, like whiskey, and they've just got this like knack of like taking like alcoholic beverages and like becoming the kings of them. Like, Didn't they have like one of the world's nicest Proseccos or something recently?
Yes, definitely. It's an amazing shop, and I just think I'm so happy I live next to it. It's a shop that sells like really soft, like cushiony stuff, like, and it has the specials every Thursday and Sunday, and then you've got Boots in the next aisle, and it's fantastic. So what could go wrong, really? Yeah. Like booze and a blanket is what I could buy, and that's, I'm happy with that.
Hmm. Looks so. Take my hat off to you. I really can't stand gym myself, but fair play.
You won't force it down. You don't worry. It's fine. You're safe.
Good. So what we usually ask, like towards the like end of the show, like something interesting or like quirky like about yourself, or something unexpected that people don't know about you, so it could be like and I'm buying you time here to think, it could be like a Netflix obsession, it could be like a new food that you've started eating and you're like, oh my god, I can't believe like I've not been eating this all these years.
I don't need time because I've always got this, right?
Oh,
so I always hear this question, you know, when you just like do icebreakers and stuff like that at work or something like that, people are like, oh, I'm going to tell you something interesting about you. And I'm always like, everyone else looks around, they're like, oh, crap, no, don't start with me. I'm always like, I'm ready. Okay.
Ooh.
So, my genetics. I am quarter African, and my great-granddad was born in Somalia, came over, did the do, and went back over. And my dad was like born and raised in England, and I've got two brothers. So me and my brothers are quite a genetic miracle. So my older brother is black.
Yeah.
I am like kind of like vanilla-y, like caramel kind of colour.
Yeah.
And then my little brother is white and ginger. And when we go out together, it's quite funny because no one would know we're related. I mean, apart from like, we have similar like features. But especially if you put my brothers together, who like literally opposite ends of the colour spectrum.
Yeah.
It's quite funny. And my mum swears she didn't sleep with the milkman. So I think she would have told us by now. We would have been told by now, surely.
Yes.
So I've got to believe her. But yeah, that's my interesting fact, is like whenever I like to show people photos sometimes, because they always say to me, you what? You're African? It's like only a quarter, obviously. I'm not, but I wasn't born there. But then, like, I start showing them pictures of me and my brothers, and they're like, "What?" And like, you look at, like, I'm the spitting image of my dad, really. But obviously, you know, lighter skinned. But it is quite funny when people kind of like see us three together, especially at family events. Just like, what? So that's my interesting fact, is that I literally, a lot of people. And kind of say, oh, like, that can't be your brother or sister because it doesn't look like you. Especially in, like, movies, I've noticed. There's a lot of people have, like, always, like, oh, well, this person can't be that daughter in the movie because they have different coloured eyes or something like that. Like, literally, look at my family and then you'll be confused. So it's a wild, wild mixture.
Yeah.
Also, my granddad had 32 siblings.
What?
So I have a lot of cousins out there that I've never met.
Gosh.
Yeah, I don't know. Props to that lady, but I don't know. I've not managed to make it to Somalia. It's not on my list at the moment. But I think one day it'd be interesting to know how many actually relatives I have over there.
Gosh.
One day.
That is interesting. That's an interesting answer to that question. Thank you.
But you didn't expect that, eh?
I did not expect. When I asked for unexpected, you just delivered unexpected.
I've always got that out of my sleeve.
Yeah.
I'm always ready.
That's good. God, that's a good one.
What's your fact?
Mine. Oh, right, okay. Oh, I wasn't expecting this. It's two lots of unexpected.
Okay.
My unexpected. Trying to think if I was, did I speak about this? I did get asked it like about a month ago, I think. I think I went on about my Netflix obsession. So my current obsession is, okay, chicken wings. So
yeah.
What I've been doing, and I've started a little bit of a craze at work, is buying chicken wings. And I don't know what it is. I just started really liking spicy food recently. And like, I've never really been a spicy food person. I don't know what it is. It just happened. I just got a craving for it one day.
Yeah.
So I went to, we've got a Sainsbury's garage near me and a Marks and Spencer's garage. So I went to Sainsbury's one and they had these like firecracker chicken wings. And they were like, it said like had three chilies on it and it was like really hot. So I was like, all right, that's a good place to start. You know, these are probably going to be like, you know, set my mouth on fire. I'm probably going to hate it. And I ate them and I was like, it gave me a little bit of a tingle, but nothing really. So then the next week I tried the Marks and Spencer's ones and, you know, the chicken wings were amazing. Don't get me wrong. Microwave them for a few minutes or put them in the oven and they're amazing. And those were meant to be really spicy and they weren't spicy either. So I was like, oh. And then a guy at work was like, oh, well, you can have this. I bought this like chicken wing sauce but for work, but I've never used it. And he was like, you know, it's got a little bit of spice in it. So I started trying that. And then from there, it's just escalated. I've literally bought a different sauce every week. And now I'm on like bird's eye chilies, like sauce. It's ridiculous. Yeah. And now it's like turned into this like hot wing challenge at work where I'm eating these chicken wings covered in this sauce, which is going to like probably make my mouth bleed. It's got so much spice in it. And people just gather around and watch me eat these chicken wings to see if I can like complete it or not.
Oh yeah, well that's the thing, because like you should definitely watch this YouTube. There's like a YouTube hot wings challenge where this guy interviews different celebrities.
Yes, like, I've seen that.
Yeah, like my boyfriend watches it. Sorry, he just stepped in.
Oh, it's alright.
My boyfriend watches it, and he like watches all the different celebrities, and like yeah, they have like hot wing challenges and like different like levels of spice, and like yeah, I definitely think I don't think you're the only one. I think there's a craze going round.
God, it just happened by accident. I don't even know, and now I just can't stop eating chicken. I can't stop eating, like, specifically chicken wings, like, so.
I bet the people that, like, kind of serve you at the M&S and, like, say something just, like, always back.
Yeah.
After a chicken wing.
Yeah. Probably. Yeah. It's just, yeah. That's my unexpected, like, fact. I would say it's my obsession at the moment, because it's probably, like, you know, I don't know the last day I didn't eat chicken, so yeah. It's out of hand, it's crazy, and I'm really worried about the next spicy one, which is tomorrow, and yeah, I'm shitting myself, to be honest.
Well, you might be after it, you never know, yeah. But yeah, it's like, it depends on the sauce.
It's funny when I tweet about it, because people are like, oh, watch out tomorrow, and I'm like, tomorrow? Like, what about today when my lips are on fire and I literally, like, I'm not even sure if I'm going to finish the wings, like, So, yeah, that's me.
That's
Yeah. So, tell people where they can find you, you know, what's your social media handles, and also let people know about your website as well.
So it's all, every single one. So we've got Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. It's ECBC Manchester. So it's all the same. And then our website is www.ecbcmanchester.com. And it's on WordPress. But that's the official website. And then from there, our blog is on our website. And then you can contact us through our website, or our email is on there as well. Which is ecbcmanchester@hotmail.com. So it's all kind of got the same start. It's just at the end. But we've got like loads of different ways to contact us, you know, via Twitter, via Instagram, Facebook. So there's lots of ways to get in touch. And obviously we're always looking for help and like volunteers and people that want to contribute to our blogs. And so like anyone is welcome. They don't have to be a professional writer or anything like that. I'm certainly not. But it's just a chance to kind of get everyone's story out there. And like we're doing a blog series, I think it's next week. No, next week or the week after. It's called At Any Age. So it's all about how you can have a mental illness at any age. So we've got like the teens, 20s, 30s, 40s and 50s plus. And like we've got an each member from that age group that have like contributed to the series and written about their story. So it's, you know, I think we're looking for anyone to have a chat and just blog away. So yeah, if anyone's interested, they can find us through our website.
Awesome. I'm definitely up for doing a bit of guest blogging if you want to.
Oh, honestly, yes. Please do. Oh, awesome. I'm always looking for content because then it just means it's not me talking all the time and everyone's safe. So, yeah.
No, I want to help out. I want to be part of the movement. So, yeah, I'm definitely up for that.
Fabulous.
And I've just followed you on Instagram as well. So, there you go.
Okay, fabulous. Thank you.
So, people listening, get involved. Follow ECBC Manchester. And, I hope you've enjoyed listening. And I want to thank Emma for coming on. It's been amazing. It's been really funny. It's been nice. It's been, you know, deep, like hearing your experience as well. And I felt really privileged, like all the information that you shared and like the tips and advice and just hearing your story as well. It's just, you know, it's always like a bit of a blessing to hear someone's story. You know, I don't take it lightly. Yeah. So thank you.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me.
Anytime. You're always welcome on Know Yourself. So, until next time, guys, it's been Dan Udell with Emma from ECBC Manchester. Until next time, check out the show. Peace out.